The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is brought to you by One-Click Upsell from Zipify Apps. And I love One-Click Upsell because it offers an incredible amount of bang for the buck. If you get the app, it's simple enough and powerful enough that you can get it set up and get running in an hour or two, get those upsells in front of your customers. And in return, one in six of your customers are going to spend more with you because one in six people who are offered an upsell through One-Click Upsell actually take it. And that's money that just flows instantly without having to spend more on advertising, without having to go through painful, expensive, timely CRO processes. This is something you can set up and start seeing the fruits of right away. They've helped generate over $150 million in additional revenue for Shopify merchants just like you. So if that sounds interesting, you can learn more about One-Click Upsell and get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. The E-Commerce Fuel Podcast is sponsored by Klaviyo, the leading e-commerce marketing solution for email and SMS trusted by over 50,000 merchants. Why? Because they have a pretty amazing segmentation and customization engine built in to their marketing platform. It lets you send messages based on what your customers have done, what pages they've visited, how much they've spent with you, how much they're likely to spend with you over time with their very cool LTV prediction tool, what products they've purchased or haven't purchased. It's pretty incredible. And in a world where email inboxes are only getting more crowded, people are getting more ruthless, sending highly targeted messages is the only way you're going to be able to cut through the noise. And you can do that with Klaviyo. So if you want to make more money from your flows, from your efforts on email and SMS, check them out. You can start for free at klaviyo.com/ECF. That's klaviyo.com/ECF. Hey, it's Andrew here, and welcome to the E-Commerce Fuel Podcast, the show dedicated to helping seven-figure plus e-commerce brands build incredible businesses and amazing lives. And today we're picking back up with Tom Moore. We had a great discussion with him last week about selling his business, and this week we're focused on his framework, thoughts, philosophy, and rules for investing. He gave a phenomenal talk at ECF Live 2020 in San Antonio. Remember those live events? Hoping to have those back in the near future. But he gave a fantastic talk about how he invests money, not in the stock market or bonds or those kind of things per se, but in unorthodox kind of private investments that you wouldn't necessarily consider. And really interesting. So he talks about what kind of things he's invested in that worked well, what things did not work well as just like I mentioned earlier, kind of his framework and rules for thinking about how to invest or something or not. So really interesting. Hope you enjoy it. We also get into his thoughts on finding a fantastic number two or a COO, a right-hand man or woman that can help you run your business. Do want to caveat this episode with saying that everything we talk about on the investment front is not intended as investment advice. It's a conversation between the two of us. Is not intended as investment advice, just purely for entertainment purposes only. If you are thinking about making any investments, make sure you talk with a professional who can help guide you and assist you with those decisions. All right, that being said, let's go ahead and jump into my discussion with Paul. Your presentation this year at ECF Live was one of my all-time favorites across the events that we've done. It's really good. And you spoke about investing because you have a great track record of putting money to work in ways that I'm not sure what your kind of all-time, how much you track it, but definitely getting outsized returns, you know, probably in the 15 to 20% range plus on a multi-year basis. And yeah, there's a lot of people looking to invest money today. Obviously, there's a lot of money sloshing around. Stuff's getting, you know, bid up. Asset prices are increasing. And I'd love to, if you'd be willing to share, what some of the unorthodox, apart from, you know, traditional stuff, stocks, things like that, what were some of the unorthodox investments you made? And even maybe even before that, you can step back and you kind of have a philosophy that guides it, at least it seems to guide a lot of it, which is to invest in smart people who execute creatively. So maybe starting from there, from that kind of mindset, if you could talk a little bit about that and then maybe kind of lead into some of the unorthodox investment strategies that you've seen success with.
Yeah, sure. So I initially, it was all my business. You know, I didn't have any money, and what little money I had, I just poured into the business and grew it and eventually sold gumballs.com. And that was my first, you know, exit, and then started, you know, investing into my other businesses. But at some point, I started having extra funds that were in the bank account, and my business there wasn't a need in my business. So I started to look at passive investment opportunities. And I made a lot of mistakes early on and lost hundreds and hundreds of thousands of, of dollars, making foolhardy investment decisions, and just learned through the hard knocks. And eventually what I came to, and you know, you have losses and you have wins. And I think that it's important to reflect on, well, why did the losses, why did I lose? And then you look at the winners and ask, well, why did I win? And I found that there was a through line in both the losses and the wins. And that's what, you know, why I came up with a strategy that comes down to like, you know, these three rules that culminate in these three rules that I came up to and that I now adhere to when it comes to investing. And so rule number one for me is to always invest in someone that you know and trust. Investment and is inherently risky. And so one way to mitigate that risk is to invest in somebody that's within your circle of trust, someone that you have a firsthand connection with and established relationship with. Rule number two is to always invest in someone who has a track record of success in the space you're investing in. And so, you know, it doesn't matter how, I'll use myself as an example. You know, like I've been successful in e-commerce. And if I had another e-commerce opportunity and, you know, was raising money, then I might be a safer bet because I'm long on experience when it comes to e-commerce. But if I wanted to suddenly get into opening a restaurant, you know, or I don't know, manufacturing bricks, you know, what do I know about a kitchen or restaurant or brick manufacturing? I know very little. So it doesn't matter that I've had previous successes. I've had very little to no success in this new thing, this new venture. And so I'm always looking for people that have a track record of success in the space that I'm investing in. And then number three, simply just like invest in a business that I fully understand. And I've invested in countless like startups of, you know, this is the Uber of whatever that I just don't get. Like I'm looking at the deck and I just have no idea what they're talking about. And so these days, you know, I mostly invest in areas that I understand, which is real estate, Amazon business, and D2C brands. So, but the main through line that I have found, and this is what you were alluding to, is just finding really, really smart people that are able to execute in a really creative way and find and that's how they found, like, they find like outsized returns. So an example of that is a home that I purchased. I have a friend who owns and manages single family homes in a college area close to a university. He was able to buy these homes. And now this home, a home in this neighborhood, a single family home, might rent to a single family for, call it, $3,000 a month. But because of its proximity to college, he discovered an outsized return where he could rent to five college students for $5,000 a month. So significant increase over what that rental potential is for that home. And so that inspired, he was really smart. He owned and managed about 60 properties. So he knew the market well. He understood how to market it to college students really well. And I was interested. And so he helped me find a home. And I bought the home and I spent a little bit of money in rehab and then rented it to college students. And it's been like incredibly outsized returns. And now I'm building an ADU in the backyard that's going to cost me about $300,000. And I'm going to be able to rent that to college students for about $4,500 a month. And so, yeah, so that's an example of a really, really smart person who really understood his niche and was able to create something creative in order to realize outsized returns. And I've got examples of that.
Yeah, that's a great example. One that I thought was fascinating from your talk was the ticket broker, which just, I mean, like, can you talk a little bit about that? There's some other ones as well, which maybe we can get into, but that one was I thought, fascinating.
Yeah. And this is actually a good example because not everything turns out. And so this is an example of someone, you know, really, really good guy, very hardworking and had been buying and selling concert tickets for many years. Just understood which marketplace to buy, which concerts to buy, which ones will have a higher likelihood of selling out and then selling the tickets once it sells out for outsized returns. And so I invested a little bit of money and it was just getting, I mean, we were doing like 40% per year in returns. Yeah. And that ran for a year. Of course, you know, you have a black swan event like COVID can hit and you can have the best of intentions and run a really, really clean business and then just get extraordinarily unlucky. And so that, you know, unfortunately, COVID impacted all social events and concerts. And so that, you know, had a real, you know, serious consequence on that particular business. So you can go in with the best of intentions and invest in smart, and you can follow all the rules and still get burned. There's still risk. I certainly do not bat. I do not bat 1,000 when it comes to investing.
And then storage facilities, self-storage was another one. And I'd love to hear it's been more than a year, which is crazy. Wild to think we did ECF Live right before, I guess it was like February, right before the world shut down.
Yeah, that was a guy. So I've been in the entrepreneurs organization. And it's also really important to find the smart people. You need to be in smart circles, right? Of people that are a lot smarter than you. So for me, a big significant access to deal flow has been through the Entrepreneurs Organization, which is a global network of entrepreneurs with local chapters. And you have access, communication access with members all around the world, which I think is pushing like 10,000 members now. And so I was introduced to a guy up in Portland, Oregon, and all he did was buy, fix, and flip self-storage facilities. And he had a fund, and he had a number of properties down in Phoenix. And I invested in two of those properties, $100,000 each. While we owned it, and they were at like 60% utilization, he cleaned them up. He got them rented and raised rents. I mean, just very basic blocking and tackling, but he had done this 20 times over. And so he was intimately familiar with this particular type of product. So I invested $100,000 in each of the businesses, each of the self-storage facilities. They were yielding an 8% return per year while we owned it. And then he refinanced, we got some of our money back, and then ultimately sold and tripled my money. So I was making 8% along the way, and then tripled my money on both properties in four or five years.
You mentioned some of the ones that were hard knocks, like, you know, some of that early money that you lost and you won't see again. What were some of the examples of a few of those so people can, and not to say that these are necessarily, you know, always a loser, but it'd be great to hear a few case studies of those to get a little more color to them.
Yeah. So I invested in a bunch of startups, most of which I regret. Some of them have blown up. Some of them are still there, you know, and it's certainly possible that something may come of it. But if I had to do it all over again, I wouldn't do any angel investing at all. But I invested, they're sexy and they're interesting to talk about, far more interesting than self-storage. But you know, at the end of the day, to me, like, cash flow is sexy. And startups just offer nothing like that. And you know, we have this like pie in the sky shot at something blowing up. But, you know, many of those, several of the startups I invested in failed, where you get zero back, and then others are still kind of out there and we'll see what happens. I've done some raw land in unincorporated county, you know, properties that, you know, I bought a couple of pieces that had no development on them and didn't realize like the risks in having to build septic and sewer to get water. And, you know, they ended up being like useless plots of land that I sold at a deep, deep discount. So huge loss. Domain names. I started buying, selling domain names, and very similar to the raw land model, where it's just a domain is worth, if I have a generic domain like chocolate.com, which I once owned, you know, what is chocolate.com as a domain worth to a buyer? I mean, it's really what I think it's worth, and what you as a prospective buyer might think it's worth, versus something that actually has a tangible business on it. Like gumballs.com as a domain was only worth so much. It was worth a hell of a lot more because the underlying business that I built on top of the domain. Those are probably my biggest failures.
Great. And so just to recap, invest in smart people who execute creatively. And your three rules are, correct me if I get these wrong, but make sure you invest in someone you trust, someone who has demonstrated that they actually can do what they, you know, has a track record. And your third rule again was?
Always invest in a business you fully understand.
Got it. The Warren Buffett rule.
Yes.
Nice. Yeah. So I'd love to talk a little bit about, kind of shifting gears here. You have, we already mentioned him, Dave Strickland, killer partner. And he's your COO, kind of number two. And you have a great relationship. He gave a fantastic talk about being a COO, being a number two in a business, how that works, what CEOs and owners should think about, how to make that relationship healthy and functional. But yeah, I'd love to, we'll link up to that in the show notes for community members. But I'd love to hear your thoughts. Like, what are the attributes in Dave for someone who's listening that is looking for that role? Because that's a hard role to fill. It's really difficult. What is it that makes Dave so valuable to your team? I.e., what are attributes? Some of the attributes that, if heaven forbid, you know, well, let's not do that. If somebody was looking for someone like him, they'd want to try to find in someone else.
I think first off, I'll say I got really lucky in finding Dave. He was a friend of a good friend. Interestingly, like we had actually synced up over a business that turned out to be a failure, but it was the greatest success ever because it caused us to cross professional paths. I'd purchased the domain wicker.com and I need somebody to build it and run it and build out that business. So long story short, Wicker was, you know, a complete failure, not for any, not due to Dave's lack of effort. It was just a really difficult business to run, but he ended up joining me to run wicker.com and then eventually became my number two and helped oversee operations on everything else that we had going on. So, you know, and so it was dumb luck that I just got really lucky to have crossed paths and to have hired him. I think looking back, the reason that we work so well together is there really needs to be a synergy and a harmony in the person you hire. You have to be really honest with yourself. And this is a very humbling process, but really be honest with yourself about where you suck and bring in someone that's really strong in the areas that you're weak. And we happen to really complement each other in terms of our strengths and weaknesses. And he makes up in a profound way areas that I'm just really weak at. And so I think that's what that's the best value that he, you know, that someone like him brings to this role. And I think it's super important. Not to and trust, you know, goes without saying, and somebody that is worthy of trust, because you're exposing yourself in a deeply vulnerable way when you're bringing someone into your baby that you've worked and you've put blood, sweat, and tears and your entire net worth into, and to bring someone else in to hand over the reins to a certain extent takes a while, you know. And I think that we need, as entrepreneurs, need to give ourselves patience, because it's very, very difficult to let go of the reins, and trust is not earned quickly or easily. But when you have someone that is worthy of that trust, it makes you feel more and more exceedingly more comfortable to let go of the reins and turn them over.
What does that kind of division of responsibilities look like? Because on one hand, even with a COO, like, you want to be able to, you know, watch over the business, and there's certain things you need to monitor, but you also want to give him enough free rein and autonomy that he feels like he's got the latitude to make the decisions, both from just an efficiency standpoint, but also from just an enjoyment of work and quality of work standpoint. So how do you think about splitting up what are some of your rules or frameworks for what, you know, how responsibilities get split up there?
Yeah, I mean, my entire team works remotely. And so we've been doing that for years. So it's really, initially, it's an adjustment. But I think that when you hire trustworthy people and there's a clear sense of responsibilities and they're capable of delivering on those responsibilities, that's how remote work gets done and gets done well. When you have a small and lean team the way we do, we're still wearing multiple hats. So it's the responsibilities are still that we all share are moving targets to a certain extent. We went through the EOS protocol and brought in a facilitator. And so that helped to formalize and bring us a certain level of structure when it comes to our work and our responsibilities. So in our case, Dave is responsible for all things operationally. We're now working with a 3PL. We have both labor, both domestic and internationally, that and contractors that help us with marketing, with Amazon related stuff, inventory. I oversee advertising to a certain extent, legal and bookkeeping. So it's but we're a lean team, and we're going to grow. There's still a lot of responsibilities that fall on both of us. That's, you know, that, and so there is a certain degree of handoff between the two of us.
Yeah. How did you find that EOS? It's hugely popular, at least in our community, among people with medium to larger teams. If people aren't familiar with it, it stands for Traction/Entrepreneurs Operating System, and just a framework for really getting clear about what your business stands for, what it's trying to do, and who in the organization is responsible for what. Has it been how beneficial has it been for your business?
Extremely, because most, you know, and I'm victim of this as well, or guilty of this as well. Most entrepreneurs just start doing everything, right? You start as a solopreneur, and then you make your first hire, and then several hires after that. But at some point you realize you're going to hit a ceiling with your operationally. And if you're running without any sort of a structure and a clear roadmap of of structure and responsibility. And that's fine if you're running a multi-million dollar, you know, up to a multi-million dollar a year business. But if you're really trying to transcend beyond, say, 8 to 10 million, then having a foundation and a structure to build the skyscraper on top of needs to be, there needs to be some sort of a foundation and something to help facilitate an organizational structure to grow in a healthful kind of way. And I think every entrepreneur realizes that the sloppy, slapdash, solopreneur approach can only work for so long.
Hey, Andrew here with a little aside. If you're listening, you're obviously interested in e-commerce. And so I want to make sure you know about our private community for 7- and 8-figure e-commerce brands at E-Commerce Fuel. And the secret sauce, like you might guess, is it's limited to people who own stores, who are in the trenches, practitioners doing this stuff. It's a very curated community, which has three big benefits. First, it means everyone inside can help get fast, on-point answers to your most important questions. If you're trying to decide if SMS is a tool worth rolling out, if you just got suspended on Amazon, if you're trying to hire a director of e-commerce, these are all things that either people have experience with or have gone through in the forums. And if you post and ask questions, you'll get answers within hours, sometimes even minutes, as well as being able to tap into close to a decade of archive discussions. So you get a lot of insights, fast answers to pressing questions. You get to plug into an amazing network of over 1,100 experienced e-commerce entrepreneurs. So you can reach out to people if you're in e-commerce fuel. Our members are incredibly giving and generous. And so if you want to reach out to someone with expertise, oftentimes we'd be happy to share what they know. If you're, you know, traveling, hopefully when traveling is a common thing again, a lot of our members would hit in the city, you know, DC, Dallas, Sydney, Australia, you know, London, wherever it is, and be able to have someone on the ground you can connect with or maybe grab a beer with. It's an amazing network. And then finally, we've got a huge user-generated review library with over 10,000 reviews on agencies, software, e-commerce software that you can tap into, avoid costly hiring and software mistakes. Nothing is worse than spending 3 months with an agency to onboard only to find out that a bunch of people already tried them and they were horrible and they wasted a bunch of your money and your life. So those are the kind of things you can avoid tapping into the unbiased reviews and experiences of our members with our software directory. So if any of this sounds interesting to you, you should join us at ecommercefuel.com. You can learn more. You can apply for membership there. We also have a 5x ROI guarantee. If you own a 7- or 8-figure brand and your membership fees for our community don't pay for themselves at least 5 times over the course of the first year, we'll refund it completely as well as send you $1,000 just for the wasted time. So ecommercefuel.com, check it out. We'd love to have you apply and potentially join the community. All right. Back to the discussion. I'd love to, as we start wrapping things up here, covered a lot of ground. Would you be game for kind of capping this off with a lightning round?
Yeah, that's good.
What's your favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
Shopify. I mean, I started with Yahoo Store back in the day. It was terrible. Shopify is so easy and I love it.
So you're like, what is this penthouse suite? This is amazing. Least favorite piece of e-commerce tech?
I don't have a least favorite. I love everything about e-commerce.
Really? That's impressive. No bad sass. That's diplomacy at its finest. What's one of the fondest memories from your childhood?
Gosh, disappearing into movie theaters. I mean, that's what inspired me to start a popcorn company. I was a nerdy, geeky kid growing up and, you know, big, thick glasses and curly hair and was very shy. And I love just disappearing into an air-conditioned movie theater and getting an ice-cold Coke and a bucket of popcorn and just watching movies. So, yeah, I love that.
Ah, that makes a little more sense for the popcorn brand. That totally makes sense. I didn't mention this. I didn't put this in the notes I gave you ahead of time, but you're a salsa dancer. We'll link up to one of your salsa kind of dances in the show notes. Very impressive. But it's also, I remember I'm not a jealous guy, but I went to it, like salsa is very, it's a very sensual, very cool dance. What was maybe the most, I imagine the learning curve's got to be a little intimidating. What was the most nervous or embarrassing moment during kind of ascending that learning curve? Because that's gonna be a brave guy to do that.
Yeah. So just some context. Like I did not know how to dance. I was super awkward. I was the guy at the wedding that would just stand in the periphery with my hands in my pocket, trying to act like I've got some sort of beat. And it was just terrible and just deeply uncomfortable in my own body. And a handful of years ago, I thought, you know what? Like, I want to do something about this. Like, this just can't continue. And I think it's really important to put yourself in situations that are deeply uncomfortable where you're going to fail, because it cause you to fight to get better. Probably the most embarrassing part of that journey was at the very beginning when I signed up for hip hop classes, of all things. I found a hip hop dance class and I showed up and it was like literally all teenagers except me. The music came on, the instructor came on and he was showing us the one, two, three. And it was just like, it was a disaster. I left that first class and I cried out in the parking lot, but I vowed to return. And I kept going back to that hip hop 101 class over and over and over again until I could finally hear and feel a beat and feel it in my body and move to a beat. That was my goal, like very, very simple goal. And then that's when I transitioned to salsa. And that also was just deeply embarrassing and awful and painful. And I would go to the 101 classes and now I'm dancing with like a female dance partner. So now when I screw up, she screws up because of me. So it was just like an awfully uncomfortable situation. And I just took that basic class to learn the basic step over and over and over and over again, because I'm a super slow learner. And then from there, but you really don't progress in a classroom. You have to go out social dancing. And that took me a good 6 months. My instructor was like, dude, you got to get out of this 101 class and actually like go out dancing. I was like, nah, I'm not ready. And then finally, 6 months later, I went to Friday night, went to the salsa place, and I sat out in my car for 20 minutes. I wanted to throw up. And I finally went in, and they had like a really simple class at the beginning before salsa social dancing started. I narrowed in on this older woman, this abuelita, who was in the class as well, who was like super unintimidating. And after the class and lights came down, and I just beelined to her and I asked her to dance. So it was me and this like really wonderful 65-year-old woman, and we just danced basic the whole time. And that kind of, and then from there I mustered up the courage to ask other women out to dance, and I was off to the races from there.
That is an awesome story. I think that's, yeah, potentially. I mean, potentially one of the bravest things I've heard someone share on the show, because it's terrifying. Like you know, walking in, it's, I mean, even people that are fairly comfortable in social, you know, situations or just talking to people, like you do dancing and something like that, and it's just a totally different level. So well done, man. That takes some guts. And like I said, we'll link up, because you look great, man. And in the video, you look confident and composed, and you're rocking it.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, I did it my way, which is like, I actually don't know a lot of moves, and I didn't set out to. And as I told my instructor, I was like, I don't want to learn 100 different moves. Just show me the really basics. And I want to do them really, really well. Like my mission was to not just to look good and feel good, but to also, it's about the woman, it's about the lady, and it's about providing her with a really wonderful experience. And any woman that I dance with, like, I want her walk away feeling like this was a good dance. That was a fun dance with this person. And so that was my focus, is not on quantity, but quality of movement and quality of the communication, which is it's done in a very subtle way with this push pull with your, as a lead in your, through your hands, communicating to this partner's hands in where you want them to move and how you want them to move. So to be able to lead a partner with focus and presence and grace was my goal.
What was a major seminal moment or period in your life that really shaped you into who you are today?
Gosh, I think it was when I first realized that I can make it financially. It was after I started gumballs.com and I put everything I had into it, which is all my time, of course, and about $1,200. That's all I had. I launched the website and crickets. And I was spending on pay-per-click $25 a day, which was a lot of money for me at the time. It was nothing, 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 nothing. And then on day 14, I got my first order. It was like $87. And I freaked out. You know, like, oh my God, it worked. Somebody went to my website and bought a product. Like, holy shit. And then 2 weeks after that, somebody put in a $1,000 order and I profited $400 or $500. That was a seminal moment. I cried my eyes out and I was like, oh my God, like, I finally see the light. I finally see the path towards salvation. I finally see a path towards financial freedom. Like, up until then, it was a hope and it was a prayer. And in that moment, I was like, okay, it's happening. And that was just a really beautiful moment.
I was talking to someone yesterday on the podcast, and it's probably been, I don't know, 7 or 8 or 9 years. And they remember the exact day of when they got their first sale. I think most people remember, you know, very clearly what happened, where they were, you know, like, even what was
I still remember 12 years ago what my first sale was, like the exact SKUs I sold, you know. It's such a cool thing when you actually, yeah, because it's up until that happens, you're kind of just hoping, right? You're like, it's amazingly powerful.
You're hoping and you're praying and you're fighting. And then all of a sudden there's this order and it's like, it becomes real and it feels better than $1 million in the bank. Cause it's like, you've proven it, you've done it. And it's incredibly gratifying.
And for the last one, like I mentioned, you've been with ECF pretty much since the beginning and I've been to almost all the ECF lives. I'd love if you have any notable memories from one of the early events when I knew even less what was going on then than we do now, maybe Austin or Nashville. And feel free to totally throw me under the bus as well here, because I'm sure there's some things that I flubbed in those early events that I'm willing to own up for.
Yeah, no, I so many wonderful memories, but Austin, the very first event, you know, we all flew in and we had the itinerary and I just felt like everybody was just young and bright-eyed. And I had actually connected with Bill D'Alessandro before that event and we became friendly and we were even doing some business together. We were both, you know, younger and just getting started and just, like I said, just like bright-eyed. And he and I met for lunch at a barbecue place just down the street from the hotel. It was nice to be a part of this community and now like meet face to face, because the community is everything. You know, I mean, when I started, it was such a lone journey, and now to have a community of other people who are doing exactly what I'm doing and have the same fears and the same hopes and the same determination and grit. And so when I sat down with Bill over barbecue, delicious barbecue, and we just chatted and we were just both excited, it was just, that was very memorable. And then that just kicked off this just incredible event and very grateful for it and for the ECF community.
Was that the year? Was it you that went out to Franklin's barbecue?
Yeah.
Franklin's popcorn. Were you the one that went to Franklin's barbecue and like brought some of it back into the conference for
us? Yeah. Well, it was in the middle of the conference and the line at Franklin's is 5.5 hours. I didn't want to miss the conference. So I actually went on a task rabbit. I hired a professional line waiter for $17 an hour. And the dude showed up at 7:30 a.m. with like a case of beer and some cards and just like he waited in line and we were texting. And then when he was about a half hour away from the front, I Ubered over and high-fived him. He got out of line. I got in line. And then I got up and bought my Franklin, my barbecue. And it got even better. As I paid, Aaron Franklin walked out from the back and I recognized him because I, you know, read up about him and I approached him and I was like, hey, man, you know, as if I know him. And I said, you know, I'm just so like, I think I said, I'm proud of you for the business that you built. Like, this is really incredible. And, you know, I'm so excited to eat your barbecue. And he was such a kind man. He was like, yeah, go. That's awesome. Thank you so much. Like, go sit down. Your barbecue is getting cold. So I sat down and ate. And then afterwards, I walked to the backyard and he was back there grilling like figs for some collaboration he was doing with a local brewery. And he invited me back. And I just sat there and just was hanging out with him while he was grilling. It was a really cool experience. And I bought a bunch extra and brought it back to the event and shared it with a bunch of people. Yeah, it was great.
I had no idea you were hanging out with the man himself in the back. That's really cool. Have you seen, he's got a masterclass about barbecuing. Have you seen that?
No. You know what? I did. I saw something. Yes, I have. I saw something about it, but no, I haven't dug into it. But yeah, he's wonderful.
Yeah, that's great. Well, Tala, thank you. Again, it's been a really fun, you know, 7-8 years getting to know you, having you be part of the community, and so glad everything worked out with Guardline Security, you know, with the businesses you've been building, and Franklin's, I'm sure, is on an incredible route as well. We didn't even have a chance to get into that. But yeah, thank you for everything you've done for the community. Thanks for coming on and being honest and candid about that whole journey. And yeah, always love talking to you. It's always a pleasure and just really appreciate you and everything you've added to our little crew of people, man. So thank you.
Yeah, thanks, man. I'm really, it was an honor to talk, and thank you for what you built. It's been a tremendous honor, and I've gotten so much out of the community that you built, and you know, just the incredible amount of care and love that you poured into the community. You know, I'm deeply grateful for what you've built and the energy and love that you put into really creating a really awesome community, bringing us together. So it's my, I'm just deeply appreciative. Thank you.
Yeah, well, thanks, man. I appreciate it. Couldn't do it without awesome people like you. So we'll see you soon at a new ECF Live event or even down in San Diego. So looking forward to next time we get to hang out and have a beer together. Thanks so much for listening. And the fact that you made it to the end of the episode tells me you're probably somewhat interested in this stuff and might be a really good fit for the e-commerce fuel community.
Our community is the world's largest group of 7- and 8-figure e-commerce store owners and offers a value-packed form, dynamic live events, and much more. If that sounds interesting at all, you should learn about membership and how to apply at ecommercefuel.com. Big thank you to our two sponsors. Supercharge your email marketing efforts with Klaviyo, the world's best email and SMS marketing engine at klaviyo.com/ECF. And also one-click upsell from Zipify Apps, where you can rapidly increase your average order value by offering powerful targeted upsells. You can get started with them at ecommercefuel.com/upsell. Finally, thanks to Sherelle Torrecampo for helping produce the show. Work hard, adventure often, and I'm looking forward to seeing you again next Friday.
This is the ASY Radio Network live from New York.